Well, dear students, at the beginning of the semester, we briefly touched on real estate in our discussion of the investment universe, the overview of the investment universe. And we said that real estate is an entire world unto itself. And trying to teach real estate, well, it's not easy to do. It's something you really got to experience. You may take a real estate course which teaches you things that you'll very rarely ever use just so you can pass the real estate agent exam. But to become a proficient real estate investor takes time, a whole lot of money, and a whole lot of pain in the... Remember the PETA factor for mutual funds? Boy, was it low, right? Once you've chosen a mutual fund, there's nothing else for you to do except make sure the $50 or $100 comes out of your paycheck or your checking account. Real estate? Oh. Okay, well, instead of telling people about the PETA factor, I just say, well, you know, real estate is tricky, which is a euphemism for a real pain in the patootie, but there's a saying, I don't know if it's true or not, I don't know who's done the research, but supposedly real estate has made more millionaires than any other type of investment. Part of that is just because housing has just gotten so expensive in some parts of the country, and if you happen to buy in the right place and live there long enough, yeah, you become a millionaire. But you can't really eat your sell your house, can you? Well, there are ways you can do that, which we discussed in Business 121, a reverse mortgage, sell the house, downsize. Yeah, well, some of the things we'll discuss here, too. But as I'll say later on, I think one of the best ways to get involved in real estate as an investor is to get involved in the industry as a property manager or an escrow agent or an appraiser, so that you learn the ins and outs of the industry. So let's get started with our humble offering, telling you, helping you see some of the ideas that you get to look forward to when you actually get involved in the industry. Slide number two. Real estate investment type number one, direct real estate investments. These are the types of investments that we often think about when we think about real estate. You hold title to the property. Somewhere in the county courthouse or admin building or city hall, there's a record of you as the holder of the property. It's public information. And some people try to hide it through various trusts and other entities and LLCs and the like. But ultimately, the authorities need to know who owns the real estate. Your home is an investment, and often people will say, you know, why are you invested in stocks? And I would say for many years, well, you know, we own a home, so we have some real estate. Vacation home is another choice for people. My wife would always say, why don't we buy a home up in Julian or someplace? We can go there the weekend. And I'd say, we could barely keep our house together. Go up there on a Friday night, fight the traffic to get up there, clean all day Sunday, come home exhausted on Saturday, come home exhausted on Sunday, and then have to clean our house. But it can be very profitable. Now, rental property, that's a whole course, a whole world unto itself. And we'll give some tips and thoughts and ideas. But this is where most people, when they get involved in investing as a real estate investor, investment property, they're going to want some kind of rental property. By far, the most tremendous gains can come from undeveloped land that you either wait until it becomes more and more profitable or you develop it yourself. But there are enormous risks. You really have to know what you're doing, and it is not for the beginning investor. Really, there's an old saying, don't invest in dirt. I mean, you got to have some serious cash flow behind you. There's no cash flow. You still have to pay the property taxes. There's no guarantee you'll be able to develop the land. If you buy something that, as the city is moving towards that area, sure, but you're not alone. Other people are thinking the same thing. If you buy something way out there, you know, out there by Hakamba, and thinking, you know, eventually San Diego's going to spill out over the mountains, you might have to wait a long time. In the meantime, you still have to pay the property taxes. So you see these places for sale through a tax lien because somebody gave up and stopped paying the property taxes. You say, oh boy, I can get this land really cheap. And then you have to pay the property taxes, and after 5-10 years, you decide you're not going to pay them anymore, and you can't sell it to anybody because nobody wants it, and then it goes up for a tax lien. So, dear students, don't have this your first investment, okay? Especially in San Diego, because all the really good property has already been scarfed up. Yeah, what's one of the problems investing in San Diego? You're up against some of the best real estate investors in the world. Slide number 3. The other type of real estate investment type is indirect. Indirect? Well, that means your name is not on the title. Somebody else is controlling the property, and you are investing indirectly through them. And by far the easiest one, and the one that I think is probably the best for the vast majority of us, especially after we've learned, we've cut our teeth on stocks, are real estate investment trusts, often called REITs. REITs? Well, actually, they look like stocks. They buy and sell on the stock exchanges like stocks. They pay dividends. No, they don't. They pay fees from operations, but they look like dividends. And so we'll take a look at them in a little bit more detail. But they're very cool. They're not a corporation though. They're a trust. So the laws are different. What about syndicates or limited partnerships? Well, they're often easy to get into because somebody's dying to sell their share, but sometimes they're very, very difficult to get out. There's not a ready market for these things. And they were hurt by the ancient now, 1986 tax reform bill, which separated income into passive versus active income. But still, you, after being in the industry for a while, you might decide, here's a good partnership that they've been, doing good things. I want to invest with them. Once your income becomes very high, you might decide in investing in tax credits. These are low-income housing and other types of government-sponsored projects that first are giving you tax credits, which are very cool for people who are in high tax brackets, right? And then, Lord willing, they turn out to be some very decent investments, very decent. And then down the line, you're going to start paying taxes. Well, congratulations. That means you're making money. Now, here's something we talk about quite a bit in Business 121, because it is often very difficult for the youth who are looking to buy a house to come up with the down payment. So often the parents, the grandparents have some cash that they want to invest, and they will go in with the younger folks and help them buy that property by putting their name on the title and coming up with the down payment. Now, it doesn't have to be a familial relationship. It can be a business relationship. But either way, whether it's family or not, find a good real estate lawyer who knows how to structure these things well so that there's no hanky-panky and untoward stuff going on later on. How's it work? Well, let's say you're the young couple and you don't have a down payment, but the parents or the grandparents have 50 grand they want to invest. They give you the down payment. And so now you're able to buy the home, but their name is on the title, your name is on the title, and they share in the appreciation. And it's usually 50-50, but it could be a different amount. And then after, say, 10 years, you now have maybe $100,000+ in equity. You can buy out the parents, the younger couple, or what often happens is they will refinance the mortgage to buy them out. Or buy a new home. Use the equity they have now as a down payment for a new home and pay out the parents, cash out the parents. So think about it. Think about it. Of course, contact a very, and if you need somebody who's a good real estate lawyer, give me a call. Get a good referral. I know lawyers, there's lots of lawyer jokes, but there's a reason why there are lawyers, because before lawyers, right, pistols at dawn. Right, so we like to settle disputes civilly, and that's what the lawyers are for. Now, here's a type of investment that I was skeptical for many, many years, but I've since, come around, because I was really impressed with the presentation that this one woman gave. I'm not getting any kickback or anything, but it's check out. FHL Corporation are based here in San Diego. They're not the only ones, but a friend of mine came to me and said, Frank, because he knows I'm interested in investments and teach this stuff, would you come with me to this meeting? And I said, okay. and I asked several pointed questions, but I was duly impressed, and I asked the most important question in my humble opinion, what's your default rate? Oh, my goodness, she said. Let's see. We got about 200 loans now, and about two of them are in foreclosure, and there's another two that may be heading, but I think one won't. And I thought, wow, that's between 1% and 2% default? Any bank would be really happy to have that kind of default rate. That's great. So you have to realize, though, that during a recession, right, exactly, you might wind up having to foreclose, which is not fun, but you wind up with the property, which is, you know, can be a good deal, unless the property is way overvalued, and then you are stuck. So it's not without its risks, dear students, but I was at first very, very skeptical. Well, what are these things? You know, some people go to a bank, and the bank just doesn't want to touch them. A credit union doesn't want to touch them. And so they go to individual investors. It's called hard money. Does that tell you anything? Right, exactly. And so you go to these hard money lenders, and they'll say, sure, we'll lend you the money. It's usually a short-term loan, 3 to 5 years or less or more, you know, usually 3 to 5 years, at 11%, where you can get a home loan now for 4, 4.5%. So you see, the rewards are great, but you got to know that there's serious risks. But these people seem to do their due diligence. They screen their applicants very stringently, and a 2% default rate's nothing to sneer at. That's pretty darn good. Slide number 4, investing in commercial property. You know, this world is the most lucrative, but it's also out. The cost is just unbelievable, especially in San Diego. Let's start with a duplex, huh? Or maybe a small apartment building, but we're talking hotels, office buildings, stores, many other types of commercial establishments. Well, in San Diego, Southern California, well, all California along the coast, don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow for several years. You see, the rule of thumb is if you can find a place that will generate 7 to 10 times rent, which is equal to the price. What does that mean? Let's say you could rent out a place for $2,000 a month. That's $24,000 a year. If you could find a place for 10 times that amount, $240,000, that should work out pretty well. You can't buy a doghouse or a birdhouse for that kind of price in San Diego. But 10 years ago, you could. Prices plummeted, and you could find places that were selling for 7 to 10 times rent. But not anymore, right? Prices are returning back to the 2007 level. Some have gone higher. Some are nowhere near what they were at the height of the bubble. And you're up again. As I said, you're up against the best investors in the world. So you're going to be really, really in there getting your knuckles bloody. But I think the South Bay is where the bargains are, in my humble opinion. It's National City, San Ysidro, Imperial Beach, Chula Vista, Spring Valley, out by El Cajon, the southern part of the San Diego County. And it's still very, very expensive, right? It's still very, very expensive. So, let's, for example, in 1998 or so, 90, you could buy a storefront in downtown San Diego for about $1 million, $1.2 million or whatever. 7, 8 years later, they were selling for $8 or $9 million. Now, they fell back considerably in the turmoil, but they're back up there again. And so commercial property is very lucrative, but very expensive. Slide number 5. How about fixer-uppers? Well, again, San Diego is an exception because you're up against the best in the world. But concentrate on smaller properties first. Hey, maybe a duplex that's run down. You live in one and rent out the other. Fix them up while you're working. Look for low down payments, seller financing, because often banks do not want a loan to distress properties. What does that mean? In other words, somebody's trying to sell this property. They bought it 1 million years ago, and they're ready to retire, and they don't want to deal with it anymore. And the banks are saying, look, this place needs, you know, $50,000, $100,000 worth of work before we'll touch it. So the seller will say, okay, I'll be the loan. I'll be the bank. You give me the down payment, low down payment, you pay me. Now, remember, if you don't pay them, they foreclose. But it's often a very good deal, but it's difficult in San Diego. Other areas of the country, not so bad. And if a foreclosure is on the bank's books, they are very eager to finance that rundown property. They don't want it. That's not their business. Their business is the banking business during normal times. In the Great Recession, they had tens of thousands of properties on their books, and so they wouldn't even respond to you. You'd give them an offer, and they'd say, oh, we'll get back to you in a couple months. I'm like, what? This is not how things are supposed to work, because they were just so overloaded. So, again, San Diego, do your best to find fixer-uppers and work on them, but realize that you're going to be rubbing elbows with a lot of people and doing the same thing. And in my humble opinion, I don't really trust property managers. They're long on hype and often short on results. But of course, you know, there are exceptions. Nobody cares about your property as much as you do. But here's a tremendous opportunity. Work for a property manager. Become a property manager. You will learn, dear students, you will learn from other people's misfortunes and their fortunes, too. And then you'll know what to be attracted to and what to avoid. Slide number 6. Most importantly, you need to be savvy dealing with repairs and savvy dealing with renters. Why? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. One bad tenant, folks, can set you back thousands. You can't imagine it. You just want to squeeze their necks until their eyes pop out, but you can't do that. You need a lawyer. You can try to evict them, but that's why lawyers are out there, folks, and we have Mario and Jose, and we have Rolf and my son to do the repairs, because I'm an imbecile when it comes to that. So you need either be able to do it yourself, or you need good people to help you, all right, from the repairs and the dealing with the renters. You just can't break their kneecaps, although you'd really like to sometimes. But that's just the exception, folks. It's the one or two people who just make, you know, out of so many that make life miserable. But I'm not a violent man. It doesn't mean you don't feel like being violent when somebody basically trashes the place and then laughs, and as they run away, yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And on the 121 website, I have a picture of somebody who brought the motorcycle into the living room and was changing the oil and doing wheelies in the living room. Yeah. Make improvements that add perceived. Well, that isn't even the worst, by the way. I want to tell you a story. This is one of our students. And when we're in 121, I said, okay, anybody got any horror stories? I showed him the picture of the motorcycle in the living room. And this one guy said, oh, I do. My parents, he was from Texas, out here with the military. They owned a house that they rented out to two roommates. And the one roommate killed the other roommate and then set fire to the house to try to hide the murder. Uh-huh. And the firemen come, put out the fire, and see the dead body. Because the fire has to be about 1,800 degrees before it disintegrates the body, and the housing fire is about 1,000 degrees, which is still pretty dangerous, but only melts people, doesn't disintegrate them. Anyway, make improvements that add perceived value. This gentleman has several books, but I only read one of them, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I don't fix houses, but he says install a white picket fence. Yeah, people love white picket fences. And he had one house where the foundation was settling, you know, kind of going to the side. He put in new doors and windows and tilted the doors and windows the opposite way so the house looked like it was straight. That's nothing new. The Italian engineers did that with the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Look at the top. While they were building it, it started to lean. At the top, they sort of moved it to the side. Slide number 7. Now, let's get back to these REITs, these real estate investment trusts. Say I've scared you enough that you don't ever want to be a landlord. Good, because it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not that bad. I shouldn't. We have some wonderful tenants. They're just the sweetest people. But then there's those last few are the ones that stick in your brain. But anyway, you don't want to be a landlord. Real estate investment trusts. They are kind of like a mutual fund. They're a pass-through investment. Except instead of buying stocks and bonds, they're buying real estate and developing real estate. By law, just like a mutual fund, they must distribute 95% of their earnings to shareholders. Mutual funds have to distribute all of it. But they're not called dividends. The distributions are called fees from operations. So they're a little different laws, but it looks like a stock. Shopping centers, office buildings, apartment complexes, you know, folks, Home Depot, they don't own that property. They enter into a 50-year lease with the real estate investment trust. Malls, just office buildings and the like. And the real estate investment trust, that's their business. Their business is to maintain the properties, and collect the rent, make sure the places are filled up, and then they pass that through to you. And just like a mutual fund, the management fees typically range from 1 or 2% per year. Now, over the long term, they've returned 7, 8%, which is not bad, folks. It's not bad. They tend to be far more reliable, but except they got hammered, of course, in the Great Recession. But right now, they are not returning that much, really. One of my best investments, well, wasn't me, it was our group. One of our best investments was a local REIT that did very, very well. You know, we didn't think it was going to do that well. It really did well for us, but now it got bought by somebody else. But here's another local real estate investment trust called Realty Income Corporation. And they usually pay about 6%, 7% in fees from operations, but now they're paying very little. But then, of course, so are bonds and so are stocks in terms of dividends, so that's not unusual. So check them out. And in the face-to-face class, we would jump to the computer and check out Realty Income Corporation, and then there's Simon Properties and Kimco. You can also, as we said back in Chapter 4, buy mutual funds that invest in REITs. The problem is that there are just not that many REITs out there, so you're really not getting a whole lot of diversification, but that's true of real estate in general. Diversification is a problem. Slide number 8. What are some of the advantages of real estate? Well, it has traditionally been a very good hedge against inflation. What does that mean? When inflation goes up, real estate normally goes up. Financial leverage. This is the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes that allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. Do you remember margining stocks, buying on margin? Same idea here. But real estate is on steroids, as we'll see later. For real estate investment partnerships, for REITs, there's easy entry and REITs are easily liquidated. Sometimes it's difficult to sell your portion of a partnership or a syndicate, so be careful. You have limited liability, very much like a stock, right? They can't come after you after your investment has turned into piffle. They can't say, oh, you owe us more. No. Some syndicates, you might be on the hook for more, but you have to read it carefully. Ask them, am I a limited liability partner? And then, of course, you don't have to worry about management, right? Because you're not the owner. You're the indirect investor. Also, one of the things I think is cool about real estate is you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet. At least some people say, I'm in it for the long term. Every 5 minutes, they're looking at their phone. Oh, it's gone up 25 cents. Cool. Oh, no, it's a damn dollar. What should I do? Should I sell? This is a major problem with stocks. But now, thanks to Zillow and Trulia, you can check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet. Although, and there are some people who do. There are people who are addicted to watching their prices of the internet. Don't trust it. Real estate's very illiquid. You don't know exactly how much it's going to sell for. Zillow, I mean, I'm not trying to disparage Zillow or Trulia, but they're doing the best they can. And the real estate agents are trying to sabotage them every step of the way. So it gives you a rough idea of what it's worth. But don't look at it every day, please. All right, what are the disadvantages? Slide number 9. Well, liquidity. Liquidity, yes. The bugaboo for real estate is liquidity. It may be hard to sell your property or your share of the property if you're in a partnership, but it's not a problem with REITs because you buy them and sell them like a stock. And there's a lack of diversification. REITs and partnerships offer some diversification, but even they are not that well diversified. There's the passive tax shelter that we talked about for syndicates that you please familiarize yourself with this before you invest. And then there's the management and problems, the tenant problems. Oh, my goodness, the PETA factor that we talked about. Oh, yeah. And property values can decline. And you, from time to time, hear people say, no, they can't. Well, you know, the memory of 2008 and 9 is still vivid in people's history. But it'll eventually be washed away, and someday people will say, oh, it's blue skies, full speed ahead, you're going to get rich, hurry, run down, they're giving away free money. All right. Now, let's talk about your home. What a pain in the neck that is. Yeah, but you get to live in it, unlike a stock. And your home is an investment. Yes, it is. But in my humble opinion, it's a home first and an investment second. It's typically a good hedge against inflation. A home normally produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5% a year, which is kind of like bonds, but there are some notable exceptions, San Diego being one of them. And there are very, very cool tax advantages. $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. What? Capital gains tax-free. That means if you bought a house for $200,000, you, if you're married, could sell for $700,000 and not pay any capital gains. You can do that every 2 years, and you just have to, it has to be your primary resident. And I think you have to live in it, too, in the last 5 years. But be careful, because there's some rules to go with this. But this is what some people do. They buy fixer-uppers. They live in them for a couple years. They fix them up while they normally have, you know, their day jobs. And then they sell them capital gains tax-free. Very, very cool. Yay! But in my humble opinion, it is a home first, an investment second. Because normally, people dig in, not always, some people want to change houses every few years and buy up and buy up and buy up and increase their worth. But people have a tendency to get homespun. And after 20, 30, 40 years, it's not a house anymore. It's your home, and you don't even want to sell it. So remember, in my humble opinion, it's a home first and investment second. Now you're going to hear something different from the real estate agents. Oh, but my house is the best investment I have ever made. Your house will be the best investment you ever made. And when people say this, I normally think, okay, they've never made any other investments. Or if they have, it turned out really badly. So you'll ask them, you know, okay, tell us more. Oh, well, yeah, it's pretty much the only investment I've ever made, except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying. But that stuff is worthless now. And those gold coins I bought way back when. The first Gulf War started back in 1991. What did I do with those things? Where are those gold coins? You know, as we said, a house is a home first, an investment second. Because this is, as I said, this is what people say, that's the best investment I've ever made. It's the only investment I've ever made. Excuse me. Slide 12. What about San Diego Piano? Ha, ha, ha. Well, you know, prices have gone down in the past. They seem to be poised for another downturn. I don't know when the next recession is going to be, folks. People say 2020, 2021. I don't know. Nobody knows. I think it might be sooner than that. Housing prices seem to be softening. It's, what, April 2019? Car sales are down. Inflation is still down. And the Federal Reserve has stopped raising interest rates. Unemployment is still very, very low. But unemployment tends to be a lagging indicator for a recession. So we'll see. But then that, you know, it's going to happen next recession. You know, it always happens. Housing prices soften. Now, are we going to get hammered like we did in 2008 and 2009? I don't think so. But that doesn't mean I'm right. It doesn't mean I'm correct. I mean, it's hard to see housing prices falling another 50, 60, 70% like they did there. You had to go back to the Great Depression. And we don't have the rampant marketing of those optional adjustable rate mortgages. Optional adjustable rate mortgages. You know, the mortgages that people lied to get. I want a $500,000 loan. I'm only making $30,000. How much are you making? $100,000? Oh, yes, yes. I'm making $100,000. Yeah. Which means they could make the payments the first year, $1,600 a month. The second year, the payments went up to $2,000 a month. Now they're hurting. And then the third year, the payments went up to $2,600 a month. Now they can't afford them. They stopped making the payments. In the fourth year, they hit $3,200 a month. And they just wait until they get foreclosed upon. This is what was going on, folks. Is it going on now? Some liar loans you see coming back. But for the most part, no, thank goodness. Now, a little story. In 2008, fall 2008, I went to a conference with some very, very smart people, a whole lot smarter than me, making a whole lot more money than I do, and asked them directly. We were talking about, we were discussing the current situation, the current crisis. And I asked, your boy got the chance to yell, say, hey, not that way. I was very respectful. Are we going to see the end to these financial instruments, to these optional adjustable rate mortgages, these liar loans, and the bonds that were tied to these things that were sold as AAA all around the world? And he was very respectful and said, well, sir, we, as an organization, his organization, which is a very well-respected, been around for decades, we believe that they will be prohibited. We believe that they will be outlawed. He was wrong. The banking industry did not want to get rid of these things, and they did their best to make sure that they didn't go away. So they're still out there, but they're not pushed like they were anyway. But please, if you can afford to stick around, that's the key. Can you afford to make it through? If you make those payments and not have them explode on you like they did in 2008-09 with those optional ARMs, then it's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable. As we said, the south part of the county, South Bay, I think are the best values in the region. I love San Ysidro and National City because they're both walkable communities. Imperial Beach is still a great beach value, but that's pretty expensive. And don't expect what happened in the 2000s to repeat itself. It will someday. Someday soon. I'm not, maybe not soon, but someday people are going to lose track of it. It happens with stocks. It happens with real estate. It happens with marijuana and tulip bulbs. It just happens. You know, people, as we said back in Chapter 7, bubbles continually occur because the public is infinitely stupid. Slide number 13. Now, I saw this a long time ago, 1993, back in up in North County. And I just laughed. I talked with the woman whose desk it was. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. Because in the late 1970s and throughout the 1980s, real estate levitated, went in two directions, up and way up in California, San Diego. And then in 1990-91, there was a recession, and much of California businesses, the old aeronautics industry, and a lot of defense, just disappeared. And prices fell about 20-25%. Exactly. So she promises that she, do you think she did? Yeah, she probably did, right? She probably pissed it all away again. So remember that, dear students. What you heard people say in 2004, 5, 6 is, come on, Piano, because of course I was skeptical at the time. I'm always skeptical. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. Right, yeah. And they would say, some of them, I had students tell me, their real estate agent told them that prices never go down in San Diego. Excuse me? You know, it's nothing new, folks. It's capitalism, the history of booms and busts and booms and busts, and people have to learn the same lesson all over again. I like Andrew Tobias. You could read his books. They're all very good. Beware the permanent trend. Like that permanent trend? It's like jumbo shrimp or straight curve. It's an oxymoron, heavy on the moron. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. And again, you ask those people who bought in 1990 and sold in 94. Or ask those who bought that flipper condo in 2016 and lost everything when they went through foreclosure. In 2008-09, people would say, well, how are you doing? Aren't you upset about your stocks? I said, well, I'm not happy about losing 40-50%. You know, I'm not happy about 40. And But I really feel badly for the real estate investors who've lost their entire investment, and now they're stuck with a property that's, you know, they bought for $500,000. They could probably sell for $225,000, and they owe $450,000 on it or more. Yeah, I feel really sorry for them because many of them went through foreclosure, just lost it. But if they were able to hold on, you know, see, those prices have firmed back up. But that's the problem. If they weren't able to hold on, they went through foreclosure or they sold at a loss or walked away from it. It's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable. And, you know, global warming, supposedly by the year 2100, Point Loma will be an island. Some areas will be flooded, but it's not the end of the world, I think. And plus, it's a long way off for those of us who are alive today. Oh, by the way, there is no perfect investment. We hope we have impressed upon you this truism. All investments have advantages. All investments have disadvantages. And folks were saying the same exact things about internet stocks back in 1999. Blue skies, productivity gains for as far as the eye can see on the internet sector fell over 95%, or up like 94 point something or other, yeah. Slide 15. But what about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, we already discussed leverage, haven't we? But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes, as a matter of fact. It's why when we say that real estate has returned 7, 8%, it turns out it's returned more than that. You bought a property, you probably, especially in San Diego, you did a whole lot better than 7, 8%. And that's because of the ability to magnify your gains with leveraging by using other people's money to make your money. But as we saw with buying on margin, it magnifies your losses. Right? There are pitfalls. Nothing is free. There are advantages and disadvantages. And so right now in the face-to-face class, we would take a look at the worksheet that we have. And you'll see two problems that show how wonderful, fabulous, fantastic leverage is. And a third problem that shows you how horrible it can be if prices don't go up like you expected. So please do check it out, okay? Check it out. There's a commentary and the like. So please check out that worksheet. And there's an answer key. Good. Okay. Now, slide 16. Wait a minute. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Well, wait a minute. Sit down. Relax. Okay. As the law stands now, as long as your real estate is your primary residence for two out of the last 5 years, in other words, you lived in it for two out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains taxes on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. Okay? You can do that every 2 years, as we said, and some people do, you know, especially if they're handy with fixing up houses. Oh, by the way, if it's your primary residence, there's no capital losses because it's a home first and an investment second. But do take a look at this, dear students, because it is something that is very tempting to people. Again, San Diego, it's a little difficult. They're out there, but other parts of the country, this is what people do. They're very handy, and they are good at this. Now, you have to be careful. It has to be your primary residence. There's a well-celebrated case of a couple. Now, these people are fairly well off, so don't feel too badly for them, but they got blindsided by the IRS. They had a house in Wisconsin, one in Arizona, and one in Florida, and they would travel between all three. And they sold one and said it was their primary residence, and the IRS said, no, it's not. You have no primary residence. And they lost in court. The IRS won because they had basically had they were working in one area and they had their driver's license in another state and then they had their voting in one state. So there are several questions that you have to be able to answer on the IRS's website for it to be your primary residence. So be careful. And again, get involved in the industry and learn the ropes. Slide 17. Speaking of infomercials, were we speaking of infomercials? Have you seen the ad? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed Surefire real estate investment kit for $395. You will be on your way toward riches beyond your wildest dreams. And then you're going to take our introduction to fabulous, fantastic real estate investing for 3 days for only $2,995. Now, don't worry. Don't worry about burning your credit card, because, folks, you're going to pay off that credit card and all your credit cards within 2-3 months. We guarantee it. And it's no money back. I mean, and if that doesn't work, we'll send you to our super secret 5-day, only $9,995. And when that one doesn't work, we'll send you, because you're a big sucker, we'll send you to Hawaii for 2 weeks for only $25,000. Here, sign away your house. Let's take out a home equity line. You think I can make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? Watch out for these folks. They're out there. They're out there, and they want to tell you that it's so easy. They'll show you pictures of a house that looks pretty decent that sold for $1,700. Wrong. Yeah. So just be careful. None of my students. If it sounds too good to be true, on the website and in Canvas is a link to one of these reality game show hosts or whatever they are, trying to sell you $34,000 for the training. No. None of my students, right? Of course, right. Slide number 18. So my humble advice on real estate, buy a house. Make it your home. And after you have digested that purchase, then look for some rental property. But learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it, which means maybe even working for a property manager for a spell to get a feel for what you will need to be able to do. Because I'll tell you, folks, it is very profitable if you get the timing right, get the pricing right, do your due diligence. Real estate can be very profitable, but it also can be a nightmare. So, forewarned, but still, I hope some of you get involved in real estate, because it is a major alternative in the investment world. I like stocks. I just think they're a whole lot more fun, but real estate is not fun, but it is profitable. So much for my little humble. By the way, if you need a good referral for a real estate agent, I have two people who are honest, and that's what you really want, because a lot of dishonesty in this industry. Don't worry. We thwacked stockbrokers, and we'll thwack insurance agents in the when we talk about annuities. So find a good referral. Best of luck and success to you if you decide to get involved in the rental real estate investment world.